And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, supervised by Ahsoka, the Onderon rebels infiltrate the capital and carry out a series of strikes on targets throughout the city. As the Separatist Aligned King comes under increasing pressure to deal with the growing rebellions, the rebels choose a brand new leader. There will be barely any teenage drama, so it's better! A pissy puppet king, and the rebels elect a new and better leader than Saul Guerrero, which doesn't make him happy at all. We're talking about front runners this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good.
Before we were talking...
Yeah, poor Saul Guerrero. He loves his sister, but he wants to be in charge.
I'm laughing because, like, listeners, right before we started recording, we were talking about just, like, YouTubers, and Chris was like, there's this guy who used to talk like this all the time, and, like, as I was reading that, I'm like, I'm talking like the guy.
No, not even close. Not even close.
Hey, this is my YouTube channel. Welcome to Jagas and Jedi.
They've toned it down in the years. It's evolved in the intervening years. But yeah. And meanwhile, you know, it's also a video where they've cut every clip of silence out of it, so that you just see them just like a constant stream of exaggerated like TV pitchman voice. Drives me nuts. You know what also drives me nuts?
I don't, what?
AMSR. You know what AMSR is?
No.
It's one of the biggest things on YouTube now. And they're videos of people talking really close to the microphone. In a really expensive microphone, so when you listen back to it, it sounds like it's right in your ear, and they do, like, quiet things, like take a fabric scissors and cut through fabric or iron laundry with a microphone really close. And there's people who are addicted to, and when you listen to it, you know how when someone whispers in your ear or, like, you're playing with a little kid, and the little kid will say something, and it just, like, sort of triggers this, like, human feel-good feeling in the back of your spine, like, in the back of your head.
Yeah.
You know, that's the effect of AMSR. So there's people who are addicted to these videos because, like, they're the only thing that'll relax them before, they'll listen to them, and it relaxes them enough to go to sleep at night and stuff, so they have to... So there's people who just do thousands of AMSR videos, and people are addicted to them. They have the opposite effect on me. When I listen to them, I want to punch somebody.
Chris.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I know you.
As you were talking about that, I remembered very early in the podcast you said you hate when people whisper into microphones.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
Luckily I don't have headphones on, because that's the thing with headphones, it's right in your ear, and especially with they use these expensive stereo microphones that you know, pick up ultra high quality and close up, like microscope microphones, and there used to be a radio ad where a guy was, hey, I want to tell you about this great deal. And I would, like, sit up in bed and be like, punch, punch, punch. Get away from me. Get out of my ear. Who the hell are you?
You want to know the song that makes me do that? There's one song, and it happens every year. I always get stuck listening to it. I can't stand this song. I've hated it my entire life. I've thrown things at radios. I've screamed at my car radio and almost, like, swerved off the road because it came on the radio. And, like, the worst of all is, like, if I'm going to the bathroom at work and I'm peeing and it comes on, then I'm just stuck and I'm literally, like, it's literally pissing me off.
Punching the doors of the stall and stuff. Kicking the stall door.
And it's the Christmas song Feliz Navidad.
Oh, really?
I can't stand that song. Like, I've hated it my entire life.
Why do you hate blind people? Why do you hate...
What?
Why do you hate blind Mexicans?
I don't. It's just...
Oh, Hope, you're a terrible person.
Oh, shut up. No, like, for one, is I'm not a big fan of the sound of brass instruments.
I'm sorry, folks. I did not know I was doing a podcast with a racist.
Excuse me. No, a lot of it is just I don't like the sound of brass instruments. Like, oh. I've never really liked the sound of brass instruments, so it's just a lot of that.
You see, I thought you were going to say just, this. Oh, go ahead.
And it just repeats forever. It's a 7-Eleven song. Do you know what a 7-Eleven song is?
A song they play in 7-Eleven at Christmas time all the time?
No, it's a term that we use for, like, Baptist joy songs, where you sing the same seven words 11 times.
Oh, okay.
It's a 7-Eleven song. You sing the same seven words 11 times. And that's what it is. And it just repeats, and it just goes on forever. And then you have, like, those very annoying brass instruments just, like, in your head. But the worst thing is, like, my nephew figured out that I hate that song. So it'll be, like, the middle of July, and we'll all be hanging out, and he'll just be like, "Hey, Aunt Hope, Feliz Navidad," and I'm like, I will throw you out a window.
Well, you know, right now, Hope, as we're speaking, it's playing.
No,
it's going on right now.
I quit. I quit this podcast.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
I quit this podcast so hard.
I hate Christmas songs, too. I thought you were going to say...
No, I love Christmas. Like, Christmas is my favorite time of year, and I love Christmas.
Why do you hate blind Mexicans and Christmas, Hope?
I just hate that one song!
Yeah, by the blind Mexican. I might be being racist, because I don't know if he's Mexican. He's Hispanic, though.
Was he really blind?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool, though.
Yeah, Hope. He's blind. Yeah, really, he's blind. Yep.
That's not bad! Like, I don't mind that! I don't like the brass instruments. Don't you dare put this on me. My nephew is Puerto Rican. I love Latinos.
Whoa.
He's my papi. I love him.
Why do you hate me, Hope?
No. Nada. Nothing, nada.
Why do you hate my people?
Well, fine. I'm going to talk. Are you a ghost right now?
No, that's how he has that vibrato when he sings.
Oh.
Jose Feliciano.
Well... What did you think I was going to say?
He's also the guy who sang, "To all the girls I loved before."
That's a great song!
Yeah, well, there you go. Okay, so you do like blind Mexicans. And
yeah,
Willie
that's
Nelson.
A great song! I just hate that one song. Oh,
I thought the song you were going to say was the Rolling Stones' Angie, because there's actual whispering in your ear in that song.
No.
He even prefaces it with...
Like... We were just talking about sounds we hate, and that's a sound I hate, is that entire, like, 4-minute song.
Well, good. You've told the world. Now they know.
You've
told all your enemies, Hope.
But I realized some Star Wars kind of cool news, though.
What's that?
So I realized that come August will be the 10-year anniversary of the Clone Wars movies, which means we've had 10 years of not only Clone Wars, but Ahsoka Tano and Captain Rex.
Oh.
I know.
Wow.
So August is 10 years of Clone Wars.
Wow. I guess it seems about 10 years ago. Well, I guess that's Clone Wars came out right about when we started the podcast.
Yeah, I was in college and I graduated in 2010, but Clone Wars came out when about my sophomore year of college. My sophomore year of college. So I definitely remember certain episodes watching in my dorm room. Like, I remember watching certain episodes in my dorm room. And I graduated in 2010, and that was 8 years ago. So.
Wow.
I know! Happy almost 10 years anniversary, Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Wow. Ready to talk about some more Saul Guerrera?
Yeah, you're going to have to keep me on point tonight, Hope, because I am drinking caffeine today, so.
Oh, so I won't feel bad if I instant, like, put in the shut the fuck up Chris Royal?
No, not at all. I won't. It'll bounce right off me. I'll shut up, but it won't bother me.
Cool, because I always feel bad. I always feel bad when I do that.
No, I accept it.
Okay. As long as you're okay with it, we might have a shut the fuck up, Chris, tonight. All right, you ready?
I am ready.
Frontrunners is the 91st episode. Oh my god, I was so excited because I actually counted. I was like, okay, because you know how I've been worrying about, like, because I know what the 100th episode is, and I was like, what if my counting has been off? I actually sat down and I counted it, and we're right on target, so I didn't fuck up for 100 episodes.
See that, folks? J-Guys and Jedi checked their work.
Yeah, I was so excited. I was
you
just
can,
like...
You can take us as a gold standard of information.
Yeah, I was just like, 96, 97, 98, 99, fuck yeah! Yes! Alright, Frontrunners is the 91st episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on October 13th, 2012. It was written by Chris Collins and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. This is the first appearance of the droid general, Kalani. And usually when we have droid generals, they don't stick around after the arc. What makes Kalani special is Kalani makes it all the way to Star Wars Rebels. In the episode Rebels episode, The Last Battle, Captain Rex and Kalani have a battle to, quote-unquote, finally end the Clone Wars, and Ezra and Kanan get caught in the middle of the fight. Do you remember that battle?
I do.
This is Kalani, the droid that they introduced at the end of this episode. He makes it. That's him.
I have to go do a rewatch of all of Rebels again from the beginning, because I've only watched him once so far.
Me too. A couple of episodes. I've watched Twilight the Apprentice way too many times.
Yeah, me too.
And the honorable ones I've watched too many times too, because my God,
watched all the ones with Darth Vader too many times, basically.
Well, no, the honorable ones is the one with Zeb and Callus, because that's probably my favorite episode of Rebels. Well, probably my second one. I think Twilight the Apprentice is my favorite episode. Set of episodes, so.
I love that one, but my favorite is still the one where Vader first comes back and just is a terror. That one is amazing.
Anyway, back to extra information. Kirk Thornton is the voice of King Sanjay Rash. As a longtime voice actor in video games and anime, his other works include Sonic the Hedgehog games, voicing Shadow, One Punch Man, Durarara, which is a great show, by the way, Naruto, Kingdom Hearts, and one of my favorite shows growing up, Digimon, Digital Monsters, voicing one of my favorite characters, Gabumon. I love Gabumon. Barry Dinan voices King Ramses Dindup. That name is going to be so hard for me to say for the next, like, four episodes. His other works include the Adam West Batman series, the 1971 movie Fiddler on the Roof, The Dark Crystal, Adventures of the Gummy Bears, Metal Gear Solid, and Avatar The Last Airbender. Dono was voiced by Nika Futterman, who is also the voice of Asajj Ventress. Dono, a female Onderanian rebel, has a larger role in this episode as she drives the speeder and uses it to block off the street during the insurgent attack. Her character model reuses Boba Fett's hair, long hair, from season 2. Dono's name derives from longtime Lucasfilm staffer Chris Donovan. The design of Isis draws heavily from ancient Rome, from the palace design to King Sanjay's clothes and gilded laurel leaf headband. Ugolin, the aide to the king, is the same species as Dr. Bull, the well-intentioned but short-sighted scientist from the Zillow Beast episodes of Season 2. Ugolin is named after Clone Wars director Brian Callen O'Connell. I had to laugh at that because I do the exact same thing when I, like, make up character names. I'm like, what's around me? I need a gang name. Blue. There's a blanket. Thread. This gang is called the Blue Threads. I did that too. One of my characters is named after two Atlanta Hawks players because on two separate days, I like first needed his first name and Kent Bazemore was playing really well. So I was like, your first name is Kent. And then later, about a few months later, I needed his last name. And I was like, oh gosh. And I look up and Torian Prince was having a really good night. And I was like, Prince. Kent Prince. Your name is Kent Prince. So, like, one of my characters is named after two Atlanta Hawks players. Because they just happened to be on the television at the time. Yeah.
You can always say you named him after Prince.
But
and Clark Kent.
No, they're named after the Baze Gays and Torian.
Okay.
One of my characters is also named after Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves. Because the Braves game was on when I was writing. Because I'm trash.
Oh, jeez.
All my main characters have really well thought up names that have meaning. My side characters, it's just whatever's around me at the time. Or named after my real world friends.
I'm trying to think of an in for Yoda. Any of those last...
He flies high like a hawk over Hotlanta. You know who also get no one actually calls nobody in Atlanta calls Atlanta Hotlanta. So it always makes me so mad when people call it Hotlanta because it's not. No one actually calls it Hotlanta. Hey Yoda.
Great introduction.
You're welcome. I'm sorry they all can't be winners.
Yoda knows but, about that.
Well, well, you're a winner in my heart, Yoda.
In bed?
No.
Yoda's getting too far ahead.
I actually really like the platitude this week. What's the platitude?
To seek something is to believe in its possibility. In bed?
Yeah!
I think that one flies, yeah, for sure. It's not as gross as the last... I think the last one was the really creepy one.
The one that was like, fear is the best method or something in bed.
It was, it was one that should just be best forgotten.
Too bad this didn't happen before Yoda came. I have to go let my cat in my room. And so then we could talk about pussies?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Yoda. She didn't arrive soon enough. Meow. You want to come stay with me? Yeah, can you hear her meowing?
Yes.
She's a ladder. She's named Spokes for a reason. Hold on. Let me sit down. Come here. Come sit on me.
Come here, buddy.
Hi. Welcome to the podcast, folks. Good girl. So, yeah, sorry I didn't have a pussy joke set up for you, Yoda. But I tried.
That's okay. Well, Yoda will just go over here for a while.
Okay, well, I'll pet this pussy for you. Hi, girl. You have a good day? I ate 12 birds. Oh, good for you. And 2 squirrels. Aw, good girl. Don't lick my hand. I have lotion on my hand. Ow, your claws. Oh, my gosh. This is one of those episodes. Hey, ready for act one?
I am.
Okay, so. Stop licking my hand. Act one. Last week, Squad Girls, Ahsoka, Rex, Anakin, and Obi-Wan went to a planet called Onderon. I'm talking in that voice again. Yeah. Yeah! They got a call from some rebels that there to get help. Problem is that it's a Separatist-controlled planet. Get your tail out of the way! Calm down, cat. Sorry.
Thought you were talking to me.
I still don't know if Yoda... Did Yoda have a tail?
You could call it tail.
I think you made that exact same joke last week.
It's on the wrong side.
I really do think you made that joke either last week or the week before.
Yeah, anyway. Yoda's memory isn't what it used to be.
The problem is that Onderon is a Separatist-controlled planet. For plot reasons, the Jedi can't fight for the rebels, but they can teach them how to fight. This led to a debate between Anakin and Obi-Wan about the differences between terrorism and rebel freedom fighters. Ahsoka's maybe crush, Lux Bonteri, is hanging out with the rebels too. Their self-proclaimed leader is Saul Guerrera from Rogue One and Rebels, but he's just a little whippersnapper right now. His younger sister is Steela, who is way more calm and level-headed than her brother. She's also an awesome sharpshooter, too. They ended last week sneaking into the city of Isis. Oh, and there's also the really stupid love triangle forming between Lux, Ahsoka, and Steela, with Saul off to the side being the protective brother bear. On to this week! I can't talk. The Onderon feeder fighters have been making little attacks on Separatist forces. There hasn't been any civilian casualties, but the people of Onderon are starting to get a bit scared at the rebel attacks. Meanwhile, at the castle, King Sanjay Rash is not a happy camper with all these rebel attacks. He thinks it's an annoyance, until it's mentioned that the royal carriage was attacked. And he's like, they wanted to kill me! This is serious now! And he calls in the previous king, Dendup, this name, who has been a prisoner ever since the Separatists arrived, and Rash took the throne. When they bring in Dendup, Rash is all like, I'm acting rash, like my name, and jumping to conclusions that you're actually behind these attacks. And Dendup is like, I've been in jail. I don't know what's going on, bro. If the people are rebelling, this is all on you. And Rash demands the attacks to end. And Dendup is like, did I stutter? You have to end this by ending the droid occupation. And then they glare at each other while dramatic music plays in the background. What do you think of Act 1, Chris? Stop licking me!
I liked it. The one thing, though, I have to say about the difference between freedom fighters and terrorists is what side you're on, basically.
That's what we talked about last week. Yeah, it really is all about point of view. Because, so, I mean, I don't know if I mentioned it this episode, but it was really... Listeners, we're recording two episodes tonight. That's why I'm mentioning this. But in next week's episode... All of, like, Rash, King Rash and all the people kept calling them terrorists. And it's, but to, you know, us being, like, looking at them, we're on the hero side. So to us, right. They're actually, like, rebels.
Well,
but
you notice they're using the word rebels now like crazy.
Yeah.
You're hearing rebels, the rebels, you know, a lot in the opening narration, the word rebels comes out, like, four or five times. So they're really ramping up in the Star Wars timeline. This is where the rebels start, you know.
Yeah, the Rebel Alliance. And we know that, too, from, well, Star Wars Rebels.
And I like that it's sort of starting, you know, in the movies, they sort of hinted at it more as being, you know, like Mon Mothma and Padme and, like, these the political class meeting in secret. And this is the on-the-ground beginning of the rebels. I love, you can tell one of the pieces of software that's gotten upgraded is their background modeling software, because in this episode and the next episode they have these long shots. You know, they have the one shot in this one where they do something and they're like, they say something like, wow, the king's not gonna like this, you know. And then the camera just takes off up into the air, swings around the whole city, and ends on the king in his palace, you know, and directly, like, goes right to the king, showing the king not liking it. And that was quite a shot.
Yeah.
And it's very well done. I didn't even think about it till it was over, and then I was like, whoa, that's some software work right there. And
I actually had a note about that part too, so I'm just gonna go and throw it out since we're there. When we did get that overview shot, that long one, you actually got to see how the city is set up, and there's the palace, but there's walls around the palace, and then
and
further
the
out the city
is way up in the air, you know,
yeah,
in this high tower.
But there's a wall around the palace, like walls, and then you see more of the city, and then there's another wall, and then there's more of the city past that. And it reminded me of a city in Avatar: The Last Airbender called Ba Sing Se. Ba Sing Se is the capital of the Earth Kingdom, and there are three great walls. There's the outside wall that protects it, and the outer rim is where all the poor people live. Then there's another wall where the middle class lives, and then there's another wall where the upper class lives. And it just reminded me so much of Ba Sing Se because that's also another project that Dave Filoni worked on. So I feel like that was kind of like a little nice callback to one of his previous projects. There's no war in Ba Sing Se. Oh, Julie, you scare the shit out of me to this day. But yeah, I thought it was cool because it definitely reminded me of Avatar.
Well, I only have one more note, and that's they're leaving Ahsoka. They're starting to leave Ahsoka alone more. You notice that? They're like, oh. And I'm wondering if that it's...
Well, technically, she's not allowed to do anything.
Right. But, I mean, at the same time, I mean, Obi-Wan and Anakin are
like
just like,
Jedi,
well, we gotta go. You're in charge here, you know? So she's getting more responsibility.
Oh, and, you mean like the Jedi are leaving her alone, not the Rebels?
Yeah, yeah. She's getting more, you know, more... I mean, she's supposed to be watching out, but she's also like Anakin's Padawan. So, but at the same time, you know, you can see like some of it is, yeah, they probably actually do legitimately have to go away. Another of it is like, maybe we should start, you know, leaving Ahsoka alone on some of these and, you know, she's definitely getting, you know, an acknowledgement that she's, you know, becoming more capable and more responsible.
Did I had a note, but I can't remember if it was for this week or for next week about that very same point. It was this week. Well, I'll go ahead and say it. Because I mentioned last week how, like, I knew Anakin and Obi-Wan were leaving. And I felt like they might have always intended to leave Ahsoka on her own here.
Right.
And that's why they, like, let her, like, introduce herself and stuff like that. Because she has this chance to grow more and she gets more leading experience. And she gets in some of that Jedi observing training. And I think that's why last week they let her take charge a few times. So, this isn't just the beginning of, like, the Rebel Alliance. It's also more training for Ahsoka, too.
Yes.
and then I said... Remember the lightsaber lost episode where she lost her lightsaber and supposedly the moral was her learning patience? This is her learning patience.
Yeah, this is she's gotten a lot of experience in battle. She's been getting a good amount of experience in watching politics too. And now she's getting to sort of mix them together a little bit, both to where she's could potentially be doing battle, but she's also there just as not really a politician, but like as an observer. So it's definitely a little mixture of her training getting put to the test.
Mm-hmm. My only other note is I do like how there's a lot of similarities in this episode that reminded me a lot of Lothal and Rebels, and how like the Rebels would act on Lothal. But there are a few differences though, because I felt like more in this episode, more so than the next one, that the people don't seem on board with the Rebels at the moment. The people of Lothal seemed like more behind the Rebels, because then you had people like old Joe in the bar that would give Ezra information. So I'm wondering if it's just like a different time period, because this is really the first time probably on Onderon that there's ever been like rebels like this. And also the Separatists haven't been on Onderon that long, because, you know, maybe at the most like a year, maybe less. But during the time of Rebels, the Empire has been around for what, like 15 years.
Right.
So and they probably been on Lothal for a longer time. So I like that it has those similarities, but it's also, like, those differences, too, that, like, it makes sense that there are rebels on Lothal.
Well, Lothal has had time to set up an underground and, you know, all of that, you know.
Yeah, but this is, like, you know, the first time rebels have probably popped up on Onderon, which is probably kind of scary when you see droids
right.
just suddenly, like, blow up in the streets.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That's what that's the dig of quote freedom fighters / terrorists is, you know, you know that fine line between inspiring the public and scaring the hell out of them.
Yeah,
because most people are not into violence and blowing things up, or, you know, I mean the droids. It's not like. Having a bunch of droids killed in the street would be more inspiring than like if they were actual like stormtroopers and you had bloody stormtrooper parts from an explosion. That might, you know, be more offensive to people. But yeah, the people of Onderon seem to like they don't know what to do at this point, because that, you know, that their government is in flux. Their government is doing weird things, and they're occupied, and they're freshly occupied. You know, they don't know that, you know, whether if they stand up to it, whether they'll just get wiped out or whatever, you know. So they haven't had a chance to even figure out what's going on, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a kitty in my lap. I know. I'm so happy right now. My kitty. Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I have for Act 1. Act 2?
Act 2.
Maybe I can read better this time around. Let's try
it. Yeah, let's see.
Still not as rough as last week. Last week was rough.
You were tired last week.
No, I wrote it at work last week.
And oh, that's right. It didn't get it didn't get any editing.
Yeah, so Act 2. The rebels meet back at their base, and Anakin praises their success. Obi-Wan borrows a wet blanket from Windu and tosses it on top of the party. And he says that they have to be careful with the public of what the public thinks of them, and Ahsoka agrees. And Saw is like, if they're scared, we just need to fight more! Roar! And Lux points out that if the people are afraid, then they won't support the rebels. Rex and Anakin assure them that they will get a chance to fight, while Obi-Wan says that they should learn from their victories. Lux has an idea of the perfect target that will strike hard against the Separatists and get the people on their side. The Jedi and Rex meet outside to discuss stuff, and Anakin is like, these guys might be better than the 501st, and Rex snaps like, what did you say about my brothers? But he's impressed with the rebels. Anakin, Ahsoka, and Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Rex must leave the planet to report back to the Jedi Council. They leave Ahsoka behind to keep an eye on the rebels. For plot reasons, she can't interfere with the rebels' work. She can only advise them. Puberty team of Lux, Steela, Saul, and Ahsoka eye a power station in the middle of the city. Lux's plan is to destroy it. While it will knock out the power for the grid, the battle droids wouldn't be able to recharge either. In time, the army would come to a literal standstill. Saul decides to grab a battle droid and get more intel. He hurries down to the street and steals the head off a droid. The power station is heavily guarded, but Puberty team comes up with a plan. They will make enough trouble for reinforcements, steal a tank, and then blow up the power station with their own weapon. Everyone is excited, except for Ahsoka, who watches with big eyes and looks a little uncomfortable. Their plan goes into action. A rebel Dono blocks the road with her speeder full of electromagnetic weapons. It takes out half the platoon, and the rebels engage in the rest of the droids. They do some fancy sliding around and shooting, attacking the patrol. The droid commander calls for reinforcements. But the droids don't send a tank. They send roly ball destroyers instead. Ahsoka protects Steela while Saul and Lux move in behind the destroyers. Saul gets there first, but his barking... Breaks the first one, that's what I'm going to say. He destroys the first one, but his barking orders throws off Lux, who messes up taking out the second droid. Steela runs out and takes out the destroyer. Everyone is most impressed, and Steela's like, it's a normal Tuesday here. Finally, their tank shows up. The rebels split up, with Lux and Saul distracting the super commander droids. Steela takes them out one by one. Lux and Saul disarm the droids and the tank, and they won this little battle. Saul has trouble getting the tank running again, and everyone's badgering him about it, including his sister. Saul's like, I'm the leader! Look at my leader dick! And Steela's like, one, that's gross. Two, let me do it because we gotta get moving. She gets the tank up and running, handing control back over to Saul. The rebels hop on the outside as he drives it. They approach the power grid for the next part of their plan.
See, I was surprised that Saw let her get the tank started that much, but that's just because I'm familiar with the later Saw Gerrera, so I thought he was going to be more of a prick in here.
You know, I think if it was anybody but his sister.
This is the only part of the story so far that like where I think the plot they let the plot fall a little bit. And, alright, we've got, these guys are sort of turning into, you know, they even have a car bomb, like a terrorist method sort of set up, you know, with the, with waiting for the droids. And dummy droids. I'm happy there's still more dummy droids in this one. But
yeah.
The whole thing about, okay, we're going to blow up the power station and you know, that'll power down the droids. That's cool, and they succeed. But there were two ways they could have... Two ways... Or three ways, because the third way could have been a combination of the first two. But there were three ways you could sort of go with that story after that, with the consequences of it. One being, all right, we see that the droids have lost their power thing, but that isn't sort of pursued. That... You know, basically all we see are like, okay, there's some new droids in, but we don't know how they're powered or anything. So we don't really see the effects of the victory part of it. But another thing they could have pursued is that the Separatists and the King could have used this as, look at this terrorist attack on our power grid, you know. And
I was waiting for that too, that people were going to be like, hey, where's our power? Yeah, like, I was waiting for the people to be like, we don't have any power.
Maybe the people of Onderon have a little more grit to them than we've been giving them credit for. But, you know, you don't really see any consequences of this attack. You just see that, okay, they succeeded in the initial idea of what they wanted to do. But the consequences of it are only that other droids are summoned, you know. There's just more that, you know, they call in an extra tough droid general and more droids. There's so many things they could have done. They could have had the public mad because they didn't have any power. They could have had the Separatists punish the public for the rebel attack, you know, for the terrorist attack.
Hell, the King could have been like, let me pull out this, like, hospital gal, and the gal been like, we need power for the hospital.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different ways it could have gone in there to feed the whole, you know, freedom fighters / terrorist narrative, you know, from both sides, but they didn't follow in on it. It's only actually a real minor quibble of mine, because they're still focusing on other things, you know. They just decided not to follow that storyline, and that's fine. But I really was expecting it, and it would have kind of made sense.
Yeah.
That's about it I've got for the notes for that part.
Well, my first note is very important. Rex still looks dumb in his outfit.
Well, at least he knows he's going to get to change out of it soon enough.
But actually, I was thinking about it. This idea dawned on me as I was reading through the notes, so I added it right back, right fast. So, the reason Obi-Wan and Anakin are returning to Coruscant, because they have to talk to the Jedi Council, why not leave Rex behind, too?
I don't know. Maybe they want to leave Ahsoka on her own without a crutch, you know?
Man,
I don't know.
I loved a duo story of Rex and Ahsoka.
Yeah. It would have kind of made sense, but I think it's more of a story element sort of thing. Unless whatever the, you know, unless Obi-Wan and Anakin have something specific that they have to do that they're going to need Rex for, too.
I mean, I could see, like, you know, there's an ongoing war. You know, Rex probably needs to get back to the 501st.
Well, they might have a specific mission for the three of them, you know.
Yeah.
That they have to go to. I don't know.
But they're still just, like, I was sort of thinking, like,
that doesn't really hold up, because all you see is them on, you see them video Skyping, and they're just standing around the Jedi Council.
I know, and I was just thinking, like, I can't think of a single story where Rex and Ahsoka have been on their own. Because Rex has been with Obi-Wan, Rex has been with Anakin, Ahsoka has been with Obi-Wan and Anakin, or all three of them together. But we haven't had a story, that I can think of, that Rex and Ahsoka have been one-on-one together. I don't think they've had a scene by themselves since... Actually, no. There was a fight where Ahsoka fought General Grievous, but there was other clones there, and Anakin was still on the space station.
Right.
He was still there, but he wasn't actually in the fight. That's about the only time, and I just think that would have been really cool to see the two Clone Wars characters thriving, because the implications then for Rebels, You know, like, they've been, you know, their reunion would have been much better. There would have been more background. Because, like, we know that Rex knows Saw Gerrera and Rebels, and, like, they were friendly towards each other and stuff. But that would have given Rex more time to develop a relationship with Saw. I mean, there's a lot they could have done there. But I guess it's just, like, an extra person to animate and have running around.
That's true, too.
Yeah. So I mentioned my note on the first act about Ahsoka learning patience and stuff like that. The only other thing I had about that is Ahsoka has to be struggling not to act. I mean, you can see it in her face. Like, when they come up with the plan for the power station, like, she just kind of, like, leans back and her eyes are... I actually laughed at the moment because she just... Her eyes are so big and she's just watching them, like, look at my little monsters I've created.
Well, she was going like, well, this is risky. I kind of like it.
Yeah, but, like, you know, if she could be part of the power station plan, it would just be no problem for them to take it. So it just has to be so hard for her to sit back on her heels and just watch.
Yeah, but it's gratifying probably to see them pull it off, too, so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she even says it. I think she says something like in Act 3, and she was just like, wow, our crazy plan works, or something like that. Something along those lines. And I like how, and we've been already talking about this before, I like how the episode is still pushing what we talked about last week, about the differences between rebel insurgents and terrorists. It's all about point of view. We, the viewer, perceives these rebels to be the good guys. The droids and the King Rash are calling them terrorists. We've already been talking about that. I also already like seeing already that Saw is struggling as a leader, and Steela is the one stepping up and taking that power in that position. And how it's sort of grating on Saul, but, like, right now it's kind of cool, though, because, you know, it's his sister.
Has enough intelligence to sort of realize that it's not a, you know, that he would be being a, you know, he would actually be hurting their cause by squashing that, even though he really wants to, you know?
Yeah.
He really does not want her to show superior leadership skills to him, but at the same time... You know, why not?
I really do think if it was anybody other than Steela doing that, like, I think if even Ahsoka was just like, Saul, get out of the tank, he'd be like, no.
That's why I'm impressed with the writing with this, because as someone who's new to season 5, but also has seen Rebels and Rogue One, and seen Saw Gerrera and that, and sort of knew, like, what a description of his character is. I like that he's a more nuanced character than just sort of, like, you know, a good-intentioned, well-intentioned rebel guy, but ethically challenged to where he'd go too far. And I like that they're going to take him there, you know? They're not going to start him out with that. They're taking him there methodically and... through an extended story rather than 2 episodes or something, which is really what I thought they would do. That's usually about how much time, you know, what one arc is usually about the time you have for a non, you know, main character's story arc and character development in a season of Clone Wars. So I'm very happy with this.
Yeah, you were talking... Before we started recording, you were talking about that a little bit, too, about how it actually surprised you that they were going slow with his character.
Yeah, I just thought, just generally, and this isn't even a slam on the writing of Clone Wars, it's just sort of the nature of the beast of a weekly kids cartoon, you know, is you don't really, usually you have caricatures, but Clone Wars hasn't opted for having as many. They have some characters who are just sort of caricatures, but they've opted for having, you know, some pretty realistic character development for what this is. But this is even a little more nuanced. This is almost you know, more like you would get the development of Anakin or Ahsoka or something, you know. Usually they don't have as much time to take Saw Gerrera from where he is to where he's got to be at the end of his arc, And it's obvious that he's going to be in more than like 3 or 4 episodes of Clone Wars.
I'm digging it.
I expected him to be sort of all the characteristics of what I'd come to know about him, but toned way down, you know. And so far, a lot of them aren't even there yet. So,
yeah, it's, what I find interesting is also, I feel like I always wonder how far ahead Dave Filoni plans, and if he knew at this time that he was going to make Rebels. And the reason I keep coming back to that is...
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I feel like when maybe he was doing Rebels, he was just like, hey, remember that Saw Gerrera guy we had? Let's bring him back.
Well, but no, I wouldn't put it past him to be like, you know, there might be something in the future, so we might as well have some characters that could be used down the line, possibly, if that's a, you know... It, you know, it could have been something he was doing to set himself up for anything that might happen, you know.
Yeah.
Or for season 10 of Clone Wars or something like that.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, look at Lux. Like, Lux showed up first in, like, season 2, and then we saw him again in season 3, and then now... Oh, no, I'm sorry, season 4, and... Wait, when did Lux show up in season... maybe it was 3, 4, and now 5, instead of 2, 4, and 5. I feel like... Yeah, he's setting up these characters that if they potentially kept going, they could use them. And maybe that's why they're going much more slower with Saul, to set up a potential of, we might be, yeah, we're using him here, but we want the door open for the future.
Right.
And that's why it was so easy in Rebels to be like, hey, look at this Saul guy. Well, right. Actually, first in Rogue One, because he was in Rogue One first.
Right.
So.
But by the time he was in Rogue One... While he was being written into Rogue One, they were, you know, writing and planning him into Rebels. So it was all sort of planned at the same time.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Which is so interesting, too. Like, that's one of my favorite... And I mentioned it when we did our Rogue One commentary, is that's, like, one of my favorite parts of this new canon. I mean, I was actually talking with a customer the other day, and he was a fan of the EU stuff, and he was just like, I just can't really get into a lot of this, like, canon stuff, and I don't understand, like, why... new fans aren't really into the EU. And I was talking to him, I was like, well, the thing is, there's what, like, 30 years of, like, EU material? It's just, it's like the wild years of Doctor Who, the wilderness years of Doctor Who. It's just so much.
Well, there's...
And it's kind of scary, because there's no really good place to really jump into it.
Well, I boiled it down. There's 3 reasons why you couldn't keep the EU in Disney, but... One, all the good story elements... have been eaten up in the EU, like, you know, this is a story of Luke's kids, this is a story of Han and Leia's kids, and
actually
they have
the character I always hear about is Mara Jade, like people are like Mara Jade
and Mara Jade and all that. So a lot of the things that happened and two, if you did continue that storyline, the people who didn't read the EU, which is the majority of Star Wars consumers, then you're going to have to spend storyline either catching them up on things that happened or showing stories that a bunch of other people already know how they came out because they've already read the stories. And 3, and I think the most important reason of all, is Chewbacca's dead in the EU. He got hit by a meteor or something, or a planet, or he died in a heroic fashion, but he's dead in the EU. And they want Chewbacca in Star Wars, because you want Chewbacca in Star Wars. He's a very profitable character for Disney, too. And everybody, and people who don't read the EU are going to go like, where the hell's Chewie? Chewie's dead? Why? You know? So
yeah.
For all those reasons, I totally could never, I 100% could never understand why anybody would expect them to do other than that. Whether you like them doing it or not, that's, you know, a personal preference, but it's almost like they had to. It was the only way they had to do stories that weren't spoiled already.
Yeah, and that's what I like about so much about the new canon, is because because of the fact that it's so much more streamlined, it's very easy for me to, like, for example, pick up the Ahsoka novel. I know when this is. I know what's happened. I know where it's going, and I know its connection to Rebels, and I know exactly where it is. If I pick up, like, a random book that's, like, actually, I read a couple of the Clone Wars EUs. I know they're set in the Clone Wars. I have no idea when in the Clone Wars that it's taking place. Just because it's just a rando story in the middle of the Clone Wars. And I'm just like, Ahsoka's in this and Rex is in this. Is this Rex before or after the deserter? That's important. Is this before or after M'Bara? That's important for his character. I don't know. And like, I'm like, how soon is this with Clone Wars? How much later is this in Clone Wars? Because that's going to affect Ahsoka's character. And so that's what I like about it being so much more streamlined now. It's very easy for me, like, as a fan. Like, if I want to pick up, say, the most recent Princess Leia book that came out, and they mention Admiral Holdo. I know who she is. I keep saying Hodor, and I know that's not her name. But, like, and they mention her, and she's young. I know this is before Last Jedi. I know where I am. And that's what I like about it, because it's just so much easier to jump into, because they make a point to actually streamline it to hit all those major plot points. And like right now, I'm reading from a certain point of view. I'm reading. I think it's Admiral Tags, whatever his name is, like T-E-E-G or something like that. He's an admiral in the Death Star, and he keeps mentioning the Battle of Scarif and how that was such a big thing for the Empire, because because it was a big thing for the Rebellion. It was the first time they come together. And it's just so cool to read this book set in the time of A New Hope, but they're talking about Rogue One, and they keep talking about Krennic. And, like, that to me is the coolest thing about
If there's something really cool from the EU that can fit into the new thing, they're doing it. You know, that's how you got Thrawn. They said, oh, people really love Thrawn. There's no reason not to have Thrawn. You know, just because we killed the EU doesn't mean Thrawn is, like, an impossibility. We can just bring him in and he has an all-new story, but we can take that character that people love. So I never was too... I'm not a big book. Somebody was asking me, you know, what Star Wars books I should read, and I was almost like, don't bother, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few that are good, but for the most part, they're, like, poorly written. And to me, Star Wars in concept and in, you know, I mean, it has stories and characters and stuff, and that's all well and good. It's a visual thing, you know. That's part of what Star Wars is. So I think it translates better to, like, comic books than it does to actual books. Whereas Star Trek, which is, you know, science fiction, there can be a total, you know, whole Star Trek story where they never leave the science lab, you know what I mean? You know, where they're just, like, poring over a concept and a few weird things happen, and that'll be the story, because it's just sort of a sci-fi, and you can have a story like that in a book and have it work as a Star Trek story. But Star Wars is very visual, and having a book where it's describing, you know, it's hard to describe a huge complex space battle, and it, you know, especially if you're not really a top tier writer, which a lot of it's happening, and you know, it's very difficult. So it just, when you're reading something Star Wars, it doesn't necessarily feel as some of the earlier stuff did, like the old Han Solo trilogy and the old Lando trilogy did, but that was because they were also written by really good science fiction, you know, known science fiction authors, and they wrote them as a genre page turner book, you know, rather than as a Star Wars book, and it worked as such. And you know, with Han Solo and you know, with Lando, it can be a gambler story, you know, a con. And with Han Solo, it was sort of like space western. But yeah, I'm not a fan of Star Trek books, as people know. So that didn't ruffle my feathers at all when they threw out the EU, because it wasn't like Back to the Future where all of a sudden the books started fading away on your shelves. You could still read them if you wanted to and be like, I like this. It's true to me.
Yeah, though I will say, reading from a certain point of view right now, the last story made me so upset because the last short story I read was a story called Lena, and it's about a guy who works on Yavin 4, and he had to send away his 2-year-old daughter because they heard about the Death Star and they saw what happened on Scarif, and he sent her away for her safety. So the whole thing is him recording a hologram to his 2-year-old daughter that he sent with her, just explaining like who he is, who her mother was, why they fight the Empire, how her mother died, stuff like that. The thing that makes me mad, and it keeps making me mad in this goddamn book, and I feel like Finn. I feel like Finn all the time in Force Awakens, because Finn kept going, why do people want to go to Jakku? And that's how I am, because I'm like, this is really sweet. This is a good daddy. He's protecting her. And then he says in the hologram, and I'm sending you to Alderaan for safety. And I'm just like, why do people keep going to Alderaan? I actually tweeted, because the story was by Will Wheaton, and I tweeted Will Wheaton like, that baby better not be dead, Will Wheaton.
That baby's dead, Hope. I'm sorry.
I know that baby's dead.
That baby dead.
That baby is so
dead.
That's
a dead baby.
It made me so upset.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's reminiscent of, like, World War II stories. There were people who sent, you know, probably sent their kids out of Nazi Germany to keep them safe and then sent them to, like, Poland or France, you know? And
yeah. Fun. All right. Act 3. Back to...
He says, drink in his energy drink. Act 3.
Yeah,
Act 3.
I just drank my coffee. It's fine. All right, Act 3. Rolling up to the power station, Steela and Ahsoka hop off the tank to draw the droids fire. A fight starts breaking out with Steela shooting the droids while Saul rolls up in the tank. He blows open the gate out to the power station. But it's not as nice and simple as they planned. Assassin droids come pouring out of the power station, and they're hip-hopping all over the place. Plus, their tank is recharging, so Saul can't get a shot off. Steela and Lux make surprisingly quick work of the assassin droids. Saul takes the shot and blows up the power station. The entire grid goes down, and Ahsoka looks on like a proud mama. Do you know who is surprisingly on board with this? The king! He can totally spin this in his favor, but then we don't see it happen, so it doesn't really matter. Meanwhile, the rebels are striking all over the city, looking like special armed forces suddenly. The people love it, and they cheer them on to free Alderaan. All the rebels revel in their victory. Back at their base camp, the rebels are celebrating their victory. Steela hugs Lux, and Ahsoka doesn't like that one bit. Anakin Skypes in and tells Ahsoka to try and stay focused. Ahsoka is trying, and Anakin says, I totally know what you're going through. Wait a second, Ahsoka turns to him. You do? You know what it's like to have feelings for somebody else? And Anakin is like, say something Jedi-like. Stay focused on your purpose and don't ask questions. It works for me. And Obi-Wan takes Windu's wet blanket again and throws it in on the rebels. Womp. And he says that this will get Count Dooku's attention and that the Separatists will retaliate to find them. Anakin tells the rebels they need to rally the people to not only stand behind them, but also lead their people on the battlefield and off of it. Cue up some Jordan Sparks and play Battlefield for the upcoming love drama and fights. I feel like a battlefield. Anyway, Obi-Wan says they need to pick a leader to rally behind. Meanwhile, King Rash is Skyping with Count Dooku, and he's all like, leading is hard, and they're attacking my pretty things. And Count Dooku is like, nah, man, I have pretty things. You are a puppet king, and I can't believe you can't handle some rando terrorists. And the king is like, your droids suck. This isn't my fault. I want new droids. And Dooku is like, ugh, fine. Whatever it takes to get you to leave me to my bubble bath. Here's a new robot commander. His name is Kalani. To prove how much you suck, he's so good that he will definitely outlive me to Star Wars Rebels. Okay, bye. And back with the Rebels, Lux and Saul are fighting again. Saul wants to push the attacks more, but Lux fears they will lose the people if they keep disrupting their lives. Steela agrees with both of them and wants to balance both plans. She gives a rousing speech to rally the troops. Dono gets on a box, seeing their response, and nominates Steela to be their leader. It's unanimous, except for Saul, who doesn't seem completely on board with his baby sister leading. He congratulates her, and then promptly leaves the room. Steela follows him, because Saul is her brother and they love each other. The end.
Aww. What a dork. Man, the King of Onderon loves his figgy fruits.
What? Jesus Christ, Cat. Say that again. I'm sorry.
I think the King of Onderon has trouble staying regular because all he's doing is eating figs throughout the whole thing.
I know.
Which is very Rome-like, I guess. You know, like, look at my fruit. I eat fruit. This is expensive. But man, that guy's just always got a fruit in his hand.
Yeah, he
just loves his fruit, man.
Maybe he was a fruit seller guy, and Dooku was like, "Hey, you're useless. Let me put you in power." And he's like, "Okay, can I bring my fruit? My cabbages."
My only other note is I'm liking the slow burn on this story. I'm liking that it's just sort of a slow, because I'm spoiled a little in knowing that like things go bad for Saul, but I like that it's that they're taking it baby steps at a time.
Yeah. So my notes. You know what makes this episode automatically better than last week? There's very little teenage drama, but then it sneaks into Act 3, and we get a little bit of it.
I don't even and it has to be from Ahsoka too, which is just like, come on, leave her out of this.
Yeah.
She ain't going anywhere with Lux anyway, so. But I get, yeah.
Yeah. But God, I love the battle droids.
Yeah, they're so stupid. They're so stupid.
They're so stupid. They're stupid. Oh yeah. See, did not. I also, you know, I was as Lux was like sliding, and him and Steela take out battle droids as easily as the Jedi do. I've really enjoyed watching how far Lux has already come as a soldier, because this is his fourth episode of Clone Wars. Episode 1, he was a diplomat talking politics. Episode 2, he was stupid and hanging out with Death Watch. Last week was episode 3, and he was learning how to be a soldier. But here, he's fighting pretty well, and he's holding his own. So that's a ton of progress in a small handful of episodes.
Yeah, and it's getting to be like a little bit, like his looks are starting to be deceiving, because he still looks like, you know, the doe-eyed
pretty
soft
boy.
Yeah, soft boy from the Senate, you know, so... You know, and he gets shit from it, but yeah, he's starting, and he's, you know, he's not backing down from battle. He's out there, you know, right in the front lines. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool to see how far he's progressed already. Okay, so big note: did Anakin totally admit to Ahsoka that he has feelings as a Jedi?
He totally winky winked that he had a girlfriend.
Yeah, and that's huge. Like. That's huge that he did that. And
yeah, really, the only one that we really have any kind of clue even knows now is Rex. Except for Obi-Wan, who's dorking Padme on the side.
Yeah, I still go back to the fact of, like, how does Obi-Wan not know until episode 3? Like, Obi-Wan, come on. But, I mean, the thing is, and this is, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. In this arc... Anakin and Ahsoka don't talk about it. And I don't think they actually ever talk about it in Clone Wars. Now that I think forward ahead into the future. And that's what I really need. I need a scene of them talking about this. Because that's a really big deal. That's, especially with like Ahsoka's journey. Because we've been saying, like, especially all through like last season, that like more and more like, Ahsoka is seeing why the order is flawed, and she's seeing this with Anakin. Stop licking my hand, Kat. And she's like seeing these flaws in the Jedi order and stuff. and she just learned that her master has a girlfriend on the side, that's a huge thing.
Well, that's what you start doing when you're growing up, you know? You know, like there's a, it's like you're, when you grow old enough that you can swear in front of your parents, you know? Or your dad cracks a beer and lets you have a, want one, son? Whoa, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, it's just, I need a conversation where they talk about that, because that is
such
a huge
how
thing.
Far that would go, yeah.
I just, that made me mad. The entire episode when the rebels are attacking things has just so many Rogue One undertones to it, and I love it. Especially at the end, like when they're all in their like night tactical gear and they're just like hitting and running and hitting and running. That's such a Rogue One thing.
Well, I think Rogue One owes way more, like 50% to like Clone Wars and 50% to Star Wars.
Yeah, I could go with that.
Yeah.
And we talked about it a little bit. Again, I just like seeing Saul struggle in this entire episode to give up power. And I also like seeing Steela not the most willing to take power either, because she understands her brother and his feelings. So that's such a interesting character moment at the end. And that was the other thing. Like,
She's more qualified because she is hesitant to take the power.
Yeah, and that's kind of a thing, too, is just, I think I might have said it in my notes next week, but I'm gonna say it now, and I'll probably say it again next week, too. I wish we got that scene with them talking. Because since we are doing two episodes this week, we know that
goes nowhere, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like that's sort of needed, is them talking it out, and him, like, you know, really coming to terms with, like, my sister's now the leader and I'm not. Like, that is the needed scene, which makes me go back to Act 2 when they're having all these, like, little battles with the droids. They could have cut, like, 2 minutes from that and, like, stuck it at the end here.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it being more, like, just an undercurrent than fleshed out. I can sort of imagine the conversation in my mind anyway, you know, how it would go. So... It's not as big a deal for me.
It is. I need all my character moments.
I know
moments.
You do.
All the character moments. And my last note was, the title of this episode is Front Runners. What do you think it means?
Well, I'm looking at your notes and I agree it totally what you... I don't know if that's what you think. Yeah, it is what you think, because the first two words in your sentences, I think it's... And I agree. I think it's a reference to Saw and Steela as the front runners for leader. You know, one of the two of them is going to be their leader. And I don't know. Like, you know, it seems obvious Saw was going to be the leader because he was sort of just like, I'm taking that position. But we've gotten to see Steela show way more leadership qualities than Saw, so... So I think that's what it is. It's about that it was referring to their, you know, that one of the two of them was going to end up as the leader.
Yeah. Couldn't said it better myself. Well, that's all I had for this episode. You want to score it up?
All right. Yes, this one, I just have to look back. Yep, as I suspected, this one has gone up a half point. This is an 8 out of 10. I like it better than the first part, and it's a simple story. I keep expecting it to go further because I know Saw's future, and it doesn't, and I'm enjoying that. I'm liking that they're taking their time with this, and that they're just telling a series of simple stories with it. So 8 out of 10. Solid, awesome Clone Wars episode, and it also has that awesome sweeping shot to the king in the beginning, which is a sort of step up in animation.
We tied!
Yes.
Yeah! I like this episode a lot, too. I like a lot of the action and the nice character moments that are woven in between the action. And also that fact that, like, Saul, Steela, and Lux are the front and center in the action. Like, that actually Ahsoka taking a backseat is really nice to let these, like, kind of new characters breathe a bit.
Yeah.
Even better, there's very little teenage drama in it, so I'm totally down for that. It's also just such a huge moment when Anakin admits that he has a girlfriend to Ahsoka. Like, that's huge! But overall, it's just, like, a fun action romp with really good character work built into it. And the battle droids are always so much fun. So I also gave it an 8 out of 10.
Excellent.
Most impressive.
Doing good, Clone Wars. Doing good.
Doing good. Thumbs up. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes. It's been a while since we've had an iTunes review, so I would love to see another one. Because when you rate and review us on iTunes, it helps people find the show. So if you like us, hate us, give us a rating over on iTunes and let us know what you think. And this week, we're still trying to catch up because we're still in season 4. So we reached the end of season 4 with our feedback. Our episodes come from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for Brothers and Revenge. Take it away, Chris.
All right.
Hi, folks. Sorry, I forgot that I have a cat in my lap and I didn't mute myself.
All right, the first three here we got are from Brothers. The first one comes from Patrick Delmore, who says in his squeaky teen voice, I think I've got 2 more episodes until I'm caught up in real time and can start commenting again, even though he's commenting right now. I'm glad Hope came around on Maul before recording this episode. I've watched it a few times.
Yeah. Yeah, now I'm looking at my next one.
All right, we got one from Gene Hendricks, and he says, Hope talks about liking uncircumcised penises. Then Hope says that with a little trimming, them end would be, I don't know what he's trying to say here, that with a little trimming, them end would be wow. I'm so confused. I'm so confused too, Gene. What are you trying to say?
It's like they're wearing sweaters. They're wearing turtlenecks.
You're welcome, everybody. We spent way too much time on uncircumcised penises here on Jay Guys and Jedi. That's all I'm
going to
say.
Not enough time.
Anyway, Paul C. Kelly, this is still on Brothers, says, haha, Yoda platitudes can bring out the classiness in Hope. Yeah, they sure can.
Yep.
We're bringing out the classiness right now. Too bad Savage killed off that guy who drove him in to see Maul. He actually seemed like a good character. Yeah, he did.
I think that's Tippy the Tapeworm.
Tippy the Tapeworm. Savage falling down the hole. What Snake Guy thought would be an offering reminded me of Army of Darkness. Yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that. That was, yeah. So Maul wants revenge again. Too bad that was his only line in The Phantom Menace. Well, they took that line and they're like, let's see, what is Darth Maul all about?
And then let's put it in like 2 seasons of Rebels, too.
As a matter of fact, let's name the next episode after it, which is Revenge. So here are we've got one note from Revenge, and that's also from Paul C. Kelly, who says, so I had a really difficult struggle with accepting Maul's survival. Me too. I also wonder if it would have been better to have Savage or even another. That's one of the mulligans that I have to give the whole presence of Darth Maul in the
I had a problem with Maul until Rebels, so Rebels makes me appreciate Maul more.
It's just like, yeah, you just don't do that damage to a spinal cord without killing somebody almost instantly. Anyway, I almost wonder if it would have been better to have Savage or even another close friend of Maul's want to avenge Obi-Wan for his death. That's where I thought they were going with it, you know? Mm-hmm. They would have developed a stronger character for Savage if that were the case. They would have had to bring him more like into more like a Maul than...
I think that was my argument in Monster, the episode Monster. I was like, and Savage, stop becoming interesting starting now.
Yeah. Not that he was super interesting to begin with. He was more interesting than his one brother that he killed, but he wasn't as interesting as Maul. So Obi-Wan goes to a really dark place in this one. My first intro to Ventress was the Clone Wars miniseries. Right. It is different seeing her with a good side and backstory. I never thought that would happen where I thought she was pure evil, which she was in those early ones, and could never be turned. I just rewatched the Anakin Ventress miniseries fight, which basically summed up Anakin's downfall in the last three seasons of Filoni's Clone Wars in one scene. I know, I can't wait till we get to that. I thought that was great when it first came out, but Filoni did so much more. Smart ideas with the to-be-continued route. It's too bad they canceled this in 2013. Yeah, it is. Well, Filoni had a lot more time to develop stuff than they did with that original Clone Wars. I think there's a sum total of, like, maybe what, like 2 hours of, you know, of that other Clone Wars in existence, you know.
That should be our next commentary. That should be one of the things.
We'll just do that as a lump. Yeah, that would probably be the best way to do it, seeing as how they're like 5 minute episodes. All right. Well, we were neglectful again, and we didn't talk about what candy we were gonna eat, and we've got this big old box full of candy.
What's a Wonder Bar? There's a bonbon. I see a bonbon. I see a Knopper.
Let's do the bonbon first.
Okay, yeah, because we are doing two episodes.
We're doing
tonight,
two candies today, so let's pick some smaller candies today.
When are we going to eat this big fucking chocolate bar that we got like 3 boxes ago?
The one that's called, it's Mr. Big. Yeah, we should eat.
No, I'm talking about the Grand Hotel Kempinski from Geneva.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one. I've actually already eaten some of that one because it's such a huge chocolate bar.
Okay, but then I might eat some of it too. Right, actually, so why don't we just eat that one off screen?
Yeah, that'll be some private chocolate for us. So
okay,
today
we're
doing Bonobon.
I'm trying to find where it's from.
It is from Brazil.
Brazil. Okay, give the kit. Wow, this is a big ass bonbon.
It is, but it's very light.
Trying to open it.
I like the packaging. It's got that twisted, like a candy you would get in a candy shop that's just in a plastic that's twisted at both ends, but it is actually sealed.
Now I can't open it.
it's definitely, it seems like it would be easier to open, but it's white.
By the way, if you're wondering why we're eating candy, Chris hates American Kit Kats.
I hate them.
So our friend Dario Gonzalez, who is his co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, is a flight attendant, and he sends us candy from all over the world to review. Oh my gosh, it is white. I love white chocolate. Oh, it smells so good.
There's chocolate inside of it.
Oh my god. Oh my god, there's a wafer inside.
There's wafer? Is that like peanut buttery?
Yeah, like a peanut butter wafer cookie inside.
It's got a wafer and then like a light peanut butter filling. Mmm. It reminds me of those Christmas peanut butter cookies.
Yeah, man, my boss makes those every year. They're kind of like those Rice Krispie peanut butter balls.
Mm-hmm.
My boss makes those every year, and I love them. Oh my gosh.
It's sort of like a peanut butter Ferrero Rocher candy, except it doesn't have goop in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm, but so much better. Mm.
Mm. This is, I think, our first peanut butter treat.
We've had peanut butter treats before.
You're right, but they're not as peanut buttery as this.
Mm. It's actually so peanut buttery, I couldn't taste the chocolate.
I think I was mistaken with the chocolate. Oh, the white chocolate? Yeah, you don't really taste the white chocolate. It's just a soft layer over the wafer.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and then the flavor is all peanut butter after that.
Well, thank you, Dario.
Yeah, man.
You're the best. We love you. Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at tutufreaks.com, where I'm posting up all the videos that I'm busily editing all week when I'm not working my fingers to the bone. At work, I'm slaving over a hot computer at home. And by the time this comes out, there should be some new monthly Mondays for me and Scott Gardner, so that should be some fun for you people. We'll be doing some new Star Trek episodes, back to finishing what we started. We're going to finish what we started. We have a Facebook page where all of our hundreds and thousands of busy podcasters, like little elves, are just filling this website full of podcasts, and you can go to Facebook and check out our Two True Freaks site and see whenever a new show is posted. We have the Cantina, which is our discussion group. You can go on Twitter and also see all the shows that get posted, and our Twitter page is maintained by the lovable, the charming, but brutally vicious when crossed, Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene!
We gotta switch it up, right, every once in a while, or people are gonna get sick of it.
I don't know why that one tickled me so much. Next week we're gonna do a conscious twang.
That was the pits of hell opening up to...
Jane rises up out of the pits of hell to fight Tenacious D for the pick of destiny.
I'm really ashamed, but I don't remember what the Norse god name for the underworld is.
Hell?
Is it?
Hella?
I don't know. Gene will know.
Well, it depends which realm are we, because there's like a hell realm and an afterlife realm, and Hella is the queen of the afterlife, sometimes called Hel, H-E-L. And then there's Surtur, who is like the fire demon thingy that is in the Norse underground.
Yeah,
the Norse underground.
I'm talking the place, the Norse underground. That's where you hear all the good death metal bands.
Yeah.
In the Norse underground.
This is my new song. It's about my feelings. It goes, ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum, Gene. I love Cookie Monster.
I know. I wish we had like some fans that were a death metal band that could do us a Cookie Monster Gene theme.
Gene.
That would be awesome. Anyway. Where can people find you, Hope?
You can find me at Jagas and Jedi, where I tweet at Will Wheaton about killing babies.
Yes! Kill them all!
No, why does everyone want to go to Alderaan?
Will Wheaton, baby killer.
You can also find me at Hope Malnex, which I'm getting really excited for, because I think I mentioned it last week, but they announced that Timeless is coming back, so I can't wait to live tweet Timeless. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. And you can also find me at whatthefangirl.com. I'm the news writer for them. And I most recently wrote a piece about how Marvel announced a new all-age miniseries. But that's just not good enough, Marvel, because one miniseries a year does not, like, work for children. And I go into, like, much more details of, like, why that's problematic.
A year is a long time for little kids. That's, yeah, like, forever. It's like the comic doesn't even really exist if you do it with kids. You miss your window of opportunity.
Yeah, so I went to a lot more detail about, like, why it's problematic that... It's good that Marvel is releasing a kids series. It's problematic that it's 5 issues once a year, and there's the problem.
No, that's how you release Harry Potter books.
Yeah.
Not comic books for kids.
Yeah. But that's all I have. Do you have anything else?
I got nothing.
Well...
Absolutely nothing until the next week, which is about... 5 minutes away.
For us, anyway.
Yes.
Except for maybe next week we'll bring in Yoda much better.
Well, we can only hope. We can only hope.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom.
Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Where have you been, Lord? Run, my son. Oh, make my bed soon, for I'm weary from hunting.